Cautio criminalis. The shadows. No. Prologue. The Vatican's secret archives smell of centuries. Parchment, incense, and the particular mustiness of truths kept too long in darkness. I shouldn't be here. The credentials around my neck belong to a visiting scholar who died 3 weeks ago in München. No one has updated the database yet. My hands shake as I pull volume after volume from the restricted section. The files they don't digitize, don't catalog, don't acknowledge. I'm looking for Friedrich Spee. Not the official Spee, the Jesuit whose Cautio Criminalis in 1631 dared to call witch trials what they really were. Systematic murder of mostly women. Not the sanitized saint they've made of him. I'm looking for what they did with his legacy afterward. What I find instead is a file marked Protocollo di Gestione della Percezione, Perception Management Protocol. Inside, production budgets, distributed agreements, studio correspondences on Vatican letterhead, and photographs. Dozens of them, from film sets I recognize. The Wizard of Oz. Snow White. Early productions. There's a memo dated March 1939, marked strictly confidential. The successful repositioning of witch imagery from historical reality to fantasy entertainment has exceeded expectations. American audiences now associate witchcraft with children's entertainment rather than church history. Recommend continued funding through intermediary cultural foundations. My breath catches. Another document, earlier, 1936. Cardinal advises that given the renewed interest in medieval history prompted by European tensions, proactive measures regarding Inquisition narrative management are essential. The emerging film medium presents unprecedented opportunity for cultural revision. Chapter 1. The Uncomfortable Question. 3 weeks earlier, I wasn't breaking into Vatican archives. I was teaching medieval history to undergraduates who barely looked up from their phones. The witch trials killed between 40,000 and 60,000 people, I told my class at Georgetown. Mostly women. Many were midwives, healers, women who owned property. The trials peaked between 1550 and 1650, precisely when... Dr. Castellano, why are witches always funny in movies? I stopped mid-sentence. It was such a simple question, a 19-year-old named Sarah asking something I'd never properly considered. What do you mean? Well, like in Wizard of Oz, in Hocus Pocus, in basically everything, witches are silly, green faces, pointy heads, cackling. Why is mass murder turned into Halloween costumes? The room went quiet. 30 students suddenly paying attention. That's... I began, then realized I had no good answer. That's an excellent question! After class, I couldn't let it go. I started researching. The transformation of witch imagery from historical victims to cartoon villains happened remarkably fast. Concentrated in the late 1930s and early 1940s. Wizard of Oz, 1939, the Wicked Witch, green, cackling, melts in water, Snow White, 1937, Evil Queen, but comic relief hag transformation. Fantasia, 1940, Bald Mountain's Demons, Witchy Sabbath, but set to classical music, made aesthetic. All within 4 years. All from Hollywood studios that were, I discovered, receiving cultural consultation from various Catholic foundations. I found a reference in a film historian's footnote. Vatican cultural advisor present on set of major productions, 1938 to 1942. Unusual for the period. Why would the Vatican care about how Hollywood portrayed witches? Then I found Friedrich Spee's quote, the one Sarah had somehow never heard in school. I confess that I myself have accompanied several women to their deaths in various places over the years, and I am now so certain of their innocence that I feel there is no effort that could not be worth my undertaking to try to reveal this truth. A Jesuit priest, 1631, risking his life to document that the witch trials were systematic judicial murder. His book, Cautio Criminalis, should be required reading. It isn't. Instead, we all grew up watching Margaret Hamilton cackle about flying monkeys. I emailed every Vatican historian I could find. Most didn't respond. One, an elderly archivist named Father Marco, sent back a single line. Some questions are safer asked in person. Come to Rome. Chapter 2. The Meeting. Father Marco met me in a cafe 3 blocks from St. Peter's Square. He was 86, hands spotted with age, eyes sharp as a hunting bird. "You're researching Spee," he said, not a question. "And what happened after him?" He stirred his espresso slowly. "What makes you think anything happened?" "Because he exposed the greatest systematic injustice of the era, and now nobody remembers. Because my students think witch trials are folklore. Because I learned forward. Because there is a gap in the historical record. The church acknowledged the trials were wrong in 2004, but there is no documentation on how the narrative shifted from horrible crime to quaint superstition in public consciousness."
"Perhaps people simply forgot."
"People don't forget atrocities. They're made to forget." Something flickered in his eyes.
Approval? Fear? "Dr. Castellano, do you know what confession is?"
"Of course."
"Not the sacrament, the act. When one carries a secret so heavy that silence itself becomes sin."
He finished his espresso. "I have carried such a secret for 43 years, since I was a young archivist and found files that were never supposed to be catalogued." My heart raced. What files?
"The church has done terrible things. We know this. Inquisition, crusades, abuse cover-ups. But what haunts me is not what we did. It's how carefully we taught the world not to care." He pulled out a photograph, slid it across the table. It showed a group of men in a meeting room. I recognized one face. Cardinal Eugenio Pacelli, who would become Pope Pius XII. The others were a mix of clerical garb and business suits.
"Taken in 1937, Father Marco said.
Vatican Cultural Commission meeting with representatives from and
why? The church in the 1930s faced a crisis. Fascism was rising. German scholars were researching Inquisition records, finding evidence of systematic atrocity. The witch trials were about to become a rallying cry against institutional religious authority, just as Europe was sliding toward war. He looked at me directly. Because of how movies were being presented to the troops, a group of men decided the solution was to make people laugh at witches instead of weep for them.
That's monstrous, yes. He stood.
The files are in the restricted archives. Section 7, subsection 44. You'll need credentials you don't have.
He placed something on the table. An advanced access card. Dr. Helena Brandt died 3 weeks ago in Munich. She was expected in Rome. No one has updated the security database.
I stared at the card. You're asking me to break in?
I'm asking you to finish what Spee started. He witnessed truth and refused silence.
Father Marco's voice dropped to a whisper.
What they did was turn witch trials into entertainment so thoroughly that now my own students, good Catholic students, dress as witches for Halloween and never once think about the women burned alive.
Chapter 3. The weight of evidence.
I spent 6 hours in the restricted archives, photographing everything. My phone's storage filled up twice. I had to delete photos of my family, my dog, my life, replacing them with ghosts. The files revealed a machinery of influence more sophisticated than I'd imagined.
1937 to 1938. Vatican Cultural Foundation grants to film studios, routed through Swiss banks. Memo line, historical consultation fees, amounts, substantial. 1939, detailed correspondence about the Wizard of Oz, a Vatican advisor suggesting the witch melt comically rather than burn.
Burning carries unfortunate historical associations.
The studio complied.
1940 to 1942. Expansion into radio programs, comic books, children's literature, a systematic campaign to make witch synonymous with fantasy villain, rather than victim of judicial murder. But the file that made my hands shake was dated 1943.
Success metrics exceed projections. Survey data from American children ages 6 to 14 shows 87% now associate witches with entertainment rather than historical events.
The Inquisition has been effectively neutralized as a moral liability. Recommend similar protocols for other historical difficulties as needed.
Similar protocols for other historical difficulties. They created a playbook, a manual for making people forget atrocities by turning them into entertainment. And then I found the contemporary files. They should have been in a different archive, different security clearance. But someone, perhaps Father Marco, perhaps another conscience-stricken archivist, had misfiled them deliberately.
Protocollo di gestione della percezione.
2002 to 2024. The abuse crisis,
Documents showing the same mechanisms applied again. Media consultants hired to manage narrative impact. Talking points emphasizing bad individuals rather than systemic failure. Careful framing of accountability as witch hunt. The irony was bile in my throat. Strategies to exhaust public attention through delay and complexity. One memo from 2018 made me physically ill. The weakness of the current media environment is the short attention span. A sustained response of incremental discourse, repeated apologies without structural change, an emphasis on individual cases rather than systemic patterns, will allow the story to fade from public consciousness within 18 to 24 months. See Coverage Cycle, 2002 to 2004, for precedent. They studied how quickly we forget. Weaponized it. I photographed everything. My hands steadier now. Anger is clarifying. Chapter 4. The Choice. I made it out of the archives without incident, flew back to Georgetown, spent 3 days organizing the evidence, verified what I could, building the story. Then I sat in my office and stared at my phone. Who do you call with evidence of a century-long institutional conspiracy? The police? The press? A lawyer? I thought about Father Marco. How carefully he'd orchestrated my access. He could have leaked it himself decades ago. Why didn't he? Because institutions protect themselves. Because whistleblowers are destroyed. Because truth without power is just zero viewer noise. I thought about Friedrich Spee, walking women to their deaths, documenting their innocence, publishing under a pseudonym because the truth would have gotten him killed. It nearly did, anyway. I thought about my students, Sarah asking why witches are funny, 30 other kids who'd never questioned it. That's when I understood the real genius of what the Vatican had done. They hadn't hidden the witch trials. The information was available. You could look it up. But they had made it feel unimportant. Historical curiosity rather than moral emergency. Something that happened long ago to people who weren't quite real. The same thing they were doing now with abuse scandals. Not denial, that's too obvious. Just making it exhausting, making it complicated, making it yesterday news. My phone rang. Unknown number. Dr. Castellano? A woman's voice, professional.
My name is Jennifer Torres. I'm an attorney with the Survivors Network. Of those abused by priests. Father Marco suggested I contact you.
My heart raced. How did you...
Father Marco has been feeding us information for years. Small pieces. He called me yesterday and said you had found something significant.
A pause. He died this morning. Heart attack. He was 86, so perhaps natural.
Perhaps.
I felt the floor tilt. He's dead?
I'm sorry. I know you met with him. Her voice hardened. Which means you need to be careful and you need to decide what you're going to do with what you found.
Chapter 5. The Network.
Jennifer Torres met me at a safe house in Baltimore. A row home owned by Survivors Advocacy Group. Three other people were there.
A journalist who covered abuse cases for 20 years, a former priest who'd been defrocked for speaking out, and a woman named Claire, who'd been abused by a priest when she was 14. "Show us what you have," Jennifer said. I walked them through it. The witch trial files, the media campaign, the contemporary parallels, the playbook. The journalist, Marcus, whistled low. "This is the Rosetta Stone. This explains how they've survived every scandal. They're not just reacting. They're following a systematic formula for making people stop caring." "The witch trial campaign worked because it targeted children," I said. "Make it entertainment before they learn it's tragedy. By the time they're old enough to understand history, they've already internalized the harmless version." Claire spoke for the first time. "They did the same thing with us." We all turned to look at her. "After my case went public, the diocese hired a PR firm. They didn't deny it happened. That would be too easy to disprove. Instead, they emphasized how long ago it was, how much the church had changed, how I was finding healing. They actually put out statements saying I was healing without asking me." Her voice shook. "They made my abuse feel like old news before we'd even gotten to trial."
"The playbook," Marcus said, flipping through my photos. "Jesus, they actually wrote down, emphasized the timeline, and healing narrative overrides justice narrative."
The former priest, Daniel, spoke quietly. "When I tried to report abuse in my parish, the bishop told me I was starting a witch hunt. That exact phrase. At the time, I thought it was just an expression." He looked at me. "Now I wonder if it was from the manual." Jennifer spread the documents across the table. "Here's what we're facing. If we release this, the Vatican will say it's forged. They'll attack Dr. Castellano's credibility. They'll bury us in lawyers. And most people," she paused, "most people won't care. Because they've been trained not to."
"That's what these documents prove."
"The training worked."
"We don't just release documents," Marcus said. "We tell a story, the same way they did. We make people feel it before they think about it."
Chapter 6. Going Public.
We spent 2 weeks building the narrative. Marcus wrote the investigative piece. I provided historical context. Claire and 17 other survivors agreed to tell their stories, not just the abuse, but how the institutional response followed the exact protocols from the 1943 playbook. We documented everything. How the witch trials killed 60,000 people, mostly women. How Friedrich Spee risked everything to document their innocence. How the church buried his testimony under centuries of silence. How they pioneered media manipulation in the 1930s to transform atrocity into entertainment. How they applied the same techniques to the abuse crisis.
The headline Marcus wrote, "The Forgetting Protocol. How the Catholic Church weaponized entertainment and PR to make us ignore atrocities."
We released it simultaneously through 3 outlets. Marcus's paper, an international newswire, and a dedicated website with all the primary documents. The response was immediate and split perfectly along the lines the documents predicted.
Phase 1, 1 to 3 days. Explosive coverage, trending worldwide, calls for Vatican response.
Phase 2, days 4 through 7. Vatican statement denying nothing specific but questioning document authenticity. Character attacks on me. Disgruntled former Catholic with axe to grind. I'd never been Catholic. They didn't care. Phase 3, days 8 to 14. Fatigue. Other news cycles. Which trial protocols from 80 years ago don't prove current wrongdoing? Legal threats. Complexity. We had predicted all of it because they had written it down. But something unexpected happened. Chapter 7. The Children Remember. My student Sarah, the one who asked why witches are funny, wrote a social media thread. Just her, talking to her phone. My history professor found documents showing the Catholic Church paid Hollywood to make witch trials seem harmless. Here's why that matters. She explained it in 60 seconds, showed photos of documents, connected it to abuse cover-ups. They literally wrote a manual for making people forget terrible things, and it worked. On us. We all grew up thinking witch trials were fantasy, but 60,000 real women died. Someone's grandmother, someone's sister, and with torture, with rape, and grave suffering. It went viral. Millions of views, thousands of other students making response videos. I'm 19. I never knew witch trials were real genocide. I literally dressed as a witch for Halloween last year and never thought about the real women who died. This is how institutional power works. They don't hide the truth. They just make you not care about it. The generation raised on social media, trained to spot manipulation, recognized what they were seeing. A playbook for manufacturing indifference. And they were furious. Student protests at Catholic universities, viral campaigns, hashtag remember the witches trending alongside hashtag church accountability. Young people who'd grown up with abuse scandals as background noise suddenly seeing the mechanism that made them tune out. The Vatican's PR machine, designed for traditional media cycles, couldn't keep up with distributed anger. Couldn't target one journalist when they were 10,000 voices. Within a month, three bishops resigned. The Vatican announced an independent review of historical accountability practices. Two countries launched investigations into church finances. It wasn't justice. Not yet. But it was something they couldn't make disappear. Chapter 8. Halloween. 6 months after the story broke, I taught my medieval history class on Halloween. Half the students wore costumes, but none wore witch costumes. Sarah raised her hand. Dr. Castellano, what happened to the families of the women who died in the witch trials? Most of them lost everything, I said. Property was confiscated, children were orphaned, and then gradually they were forgotten. Within a generation or two, it was just history, something that happened to people who felt less real than us. But they were just as real, another student said. They were scared, and they died in pain. And their kids missed them, and then everyone just moved on. Yes. That's what they want to happen with the abuse survivors, Sarah said. Wait until everyone just moves on. Yes.
I said again. That's exactly what they want. So we don't let them. I thought about Father Marco, dead of a convenient heart attack. About Friedrich Spee, who walked women to their deaths and refused to look away. About Claire, and thousands like her, waiting for a justice that institutions were designed to delay.
No, I said, we don't let them.
On my desk was a letter that had arrived that morning. Old-fashioned paper, Vatican postmark. Inside, a single sentence in Latin. Veritas numquam peret. Truth never dies. Not even after hundreds of years. It wasn't signed, but I knew it came from the archives. From someone else who'd been carrying secrets too heavy for silence. Someone still inside, still fighting. The machinery of forgetting is powerful, but it requires maintenance. It requires people to look away, to accept complexity as excuse, to mistake exhaustion for resolution. And every person who refuses is a gear that stops turning. I thought about Sarah's video, about millions of young people learning to recognize manipulation, to ask uncomfortable questions, to remember what institutions wanted them to forget. They'd grown up watching witch movies. Now they knew what those movies cost. It's not victory, but it's not nothing either.
Epilogue. The Long Work. The Vatican didn't fail. Institutions don't work that way. But 3 years after the story broke, things had shifted. Mandatory public reporting of abuse allegations in 42 countries. Independent oversight committees with survivor representation. Financial transparency requirements. And most significantly, a generation of Catholics who'd learned to question. Claire spoke at a survivors' conference in Rome. Thousands attended. She told her story, not the abuse itself, but everything after. The isolation, the PR machinery, the playbook they'd followed to exhaust her. They had a formula for making us disappear, she said. But formulas only work if people don't know they're being used. In the audience were historians, journalists, survivors, and young people who'd never stopped asking why. Why witches are funny. Why abuse is complicated. Why justice takes so long. They were learning to recognize the architecture of institutional forgetting. And once you see it, you can't unsee it. I think of Friedrich Spee sometimes, how he must have felt, documenting innocence, knowing the machinery would grind on regardless, how he published anyway. Truth doesn't save everyone, but silence condemns everyone. The work of remembering is never finished. The work of accountability is never finished. But every person who refuses to look away makes the machinery a little slower, a little louder, a little harder to hide. We don't get to choose whether institutions protect themselves, but we get to choose whether we help them. I teach my students about witch trials now, and about Friedrich Spee, and about the systematic transformation of atrocity into entertainment. I show them the documents,
I explained the machinery. And every year, more of them choose to remember. That's not nothing. That's everything.